This episode is brought to you by Envision Studio, the world's most powerful screen design tool. Unlock new dimensions of screen design with Envision Studio's adaptive layout engine, rapid prototyping, advanced animation, shared design systems, and more. Visit userdefenders.com/studio to get early access. We like to think of our champions and idols as superheroes who were born different from us. We don't like to think of them as relatively ordinary people who made themselves extraordinary. So I guess that's why I just love this idea, is that we can all be superheroes, all of us, if we have a growth mindset.
Welcome to the User Defenders Podcast, where we interview UX superheroes who fight for the users in order to inspire and equip you to do the same. And now, here's your host, Jason Ogle.
Greetings, User Defenders. Welcome to episode 50. I'm your host and guest, Jason Ogle. Surprise! I thought it'd be fun to ring in this monumental episode 50 by turning the tables on myself. Huge thanks to the Batman to my Wolverine, Justin Dower, for agreeing to be asking all of the questions this time. He did an incredible job and really added a lot of value with his articulate, human-centered responses. Now, if you'd asked me 2.5 years ago, when I was thinking about creating this show, if this idea would resonate with you, I never would have. No, absolutely not true. I knew it would resonate because I actually validated this idea before spending so much time building it. However, if you'd have asked me 2.5 years ago if the show would be the catalyst of inspiration and information for many of you to land a job and or even switch careers later in life into this exciting, challenging, and ever-evolving field, I might not have believed you. But it's happened and is happening, and words cannot express the joy your stories like this bring to me. So, episode 50, here we go. I hope you enjoy it and that it adds value to you, dear defenders, as much as you have added so much value to me. I want to take a second to share an iTunes review before we get started on the interview. This one is from Sort of Photo, and this person said, "Future superhero, 5 stars. Jason Ogle makes me excited about being a creative again. I am not a UX designer or even a graphic designer. I'm a video producer, but after listening to this podcast, I want to join this club. Jason's focus on empathy and defensive user needs counters all my negative impressions of designers as being self-absorbed, fussy, dilettantes. Wow. Jason seems to care deeply about his users, his guests, his craft, and above all, making the world a better place for everybody. Jason, your podcast is awesome, and I'm sure it will continue to be fascinating no matter what you do, but please offer some hope to those of us industry outsiders who you have inspired. Please try to do an episode about how to transition, preferably mid-career, into UX design. I want to be a superhero too." Wow, Sort of Photo. You are a superhero, and you know what? You can do this stuff, and that's what's awesome about this. Anybody can do it, and that's my message. Anybody can be a design superhero. It's just a matter of grit and mindset, as I always say. And so, go get them. You know, you got this. And let me and the community know how we can be of service to you. Thanks so much for leaving that awesome review. I loved it. Defenders listening, I'd be honored and delighted if you would do the same and leave a rating and review on iTunes. It obviously helps me to fight on, as you just heard, and it helps the show actually get in front of other new designers like Sort of Photo, who's really looking to make a switch and really looking to dive in. So I love stories like this, so I certainly appreciate it. You can do so real quickly by going to userdefenders.com/review, and I thank you from the bottom of my heart in advance.
Jason Ogle is human, not dancer. He fails early and learns often. He's a growth-minded, avid reader and listener whose vehicle is a rolling university, and a biz-minded, strategic designer who loves to make life better for his users. He's a passionate user defender who fights for the users who are victims of bad design decisions. He's an influential podcaster who uses the enchanting magic of audio to inspire and equip an audience of hungry and ambitious designers. He's an evocative, often contrarian writer who believeth in the power of the written word. He's a self-aware and highly empathetic servant leader who believes that humans are so much more than resources. He's also a loving husband, father of seven, one's in heaven, and thankful believer who has a personal relationship with the creator of the universe. Fun fact, he once had to get a manicure to be a hand model for a tech ad, and he has a rare essay titled Altars of Satan, given to him and signed by Eldridge Cleaver. Jason, it is my absolute honor and pleasure to be able to have this conversation with you, particularly on the milestone 50th episode of User Defenders. As a former guest myself, an avid listener of the show, a collaborator with you in my own Creative Culture podcast, and most importantly, as a friend, I genuinely respect and appreciate all you've done for those in our industry, particularly those seeking inspiration and motivation, and of course, for shining a light on those providing empathetic leadership. Now, in turning that light back on you, this is an opportunity for your listeners to glean sage advice from the man behind the defenders. Jason, welcome to your own show.
Justin, oh my goodness. I am absolutely humbled by that intro. Thank you so much, brother. I couldn't think of anyone better to do this with. And I told you that in my email, and it's true. I am humbled and honored that you are the guy on the other end of the mic turning the tables on me. So thank you so much for agreeing to do this, man.
Oh, absolutely, brother. This is the opportunity of a lifetime for me. And, you know, like I said, as a listener of myself, your show has been an endless fountain of inspiration. And I couldn't be more happy to be a part of this.
Oh, thanks so much, man.
So it'd be great if we could just dive right in. I'd love to pick your brain, of course, and you know, to put your brilliance before your audience, as you've done so much before with others. This is a near and dear question to me. Every superhero, of course, has a secret identity and origin story. Of course, Batman's is the best, but let's talk about yours. Could you take a moment to give us a look into your personal life?
Yeah, absolutely, Justin. So as many of the defenders listening probably know by now, I am a family man. I am happily married to my beautiful bride, Kelly. We've been married for, I think, 18 years now, 18, going on 19, I think, this year. So super thankful for that. And we have six lovely children. We, as you mentioned in the bio, we had seven, but we lost him, sadly, a few years ago. And there's a whole story behind that. You can listen to that in Andy's episode, Andy Vitale. I think he's episode 37, if I'm not mistaken. And I am a churchgoer. We go twice a week, believe it or not, and wrangle all the kids for those for that time as well. And I'm a worship leader as well. So I'm a musician at the church. I haven't done it in a while just because there just has been a lot going on. And I keep hurting myself, which is really weird. I keep hurting my right foot. I just fell on the ice 2 weeks ago and crunched my ankle. So I'm kind of recovering from that. And I am a home coffee roaster. Yay.
Yeah. Right on. Well, I mean, that's something we absolutely have to dig into. Can you talk a little bit about that? I mean,
sure.
I've tasted some of your roasted beans before. They're absolutely phenomenal. What is your process?
You've tasted and seen, haven't you?
That
it is good. So yes, I have a little Baymore 1600, and actually I had a Baymore 1600. I was mentioning to you before we started recording here, I've had my second fire in that roaster, and that's because I got busy. I have a slight bit of ADD, and even though I set a timer to go and check on the roast, I got distracted, and I realized a few minutes later, while the fire was already happening, that I needed to go and cold the coffee beans. So that did not work so well this time, and the roaster is somewhere in a landfill, sadly. I probably should have figured out how to recycle it, but it's somewhere. But I do have another one, and it's sitting right here next to me. The unboxing will happen later. So it's interesting, you know, innovation and design. This is a good segue for design. The fellow that designed this roaster, his name is Joe Beam. I think he listens to people. I know he does, because I've had conversations with him on Twitter and stuff. And he added a new feature into the upgraded roaster that I have, that won't allow you to be absent. Because I think he's probably heard too many stories of fires happening in garages and such, in houses. So what happens is, basically, if you're not present 3/4 of the way into your roast, the roaster will actually turn off. It'll start cooling your beans, and their beans will be not good. They won't be drinkable. So there's stakes. You know, he's raised the stakes. And I think it's, you know, although it's probably going to be a little frustrating for me, I think it's for the best. It's for safety. And I think it's a good design decision.
Well, conversely, your house will be fire free. So there's
so there's that.
You know, once, yeah. exactly.
Yeah, so I roast every week, and it's really just personal. I was doing it for a while, trying to sell it, and I do have a brand. It's Dreamland Roasters. There's a Twitter. I think it's Dreamland Roast. But I kind of slowed down. I think it was right after I started the podcast, after I started User Defenders, I actually kind of switched passions a little bit, which is funny because I talked to Cassie McDaniel recently, and she's like, your values will change, your passions will change, and that's okay. You know, what you valued 10 years ago or what you were passionate about 10 years ago, you're probably not passionate as much about today. So I am still extremely passionate about coffee. Don't get me wrong. It's just the podcast, it has really busied me up so much that I haven't been able to invest too much. But that is the bucket list, my friend. That is the retirement plan is my wife and I have talked about this. We do want to have our own coffee house, a coffee roasting business. And that will be something that happens probably much later in life when I figure out how to actually provide for my family doing that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the dream. Yeah. That's something that I certainly, if I'm visiting like a mom-pop kind of cafe, there's a certain vibe and energy in a space like that where you can tell they're putting the thought into every little detail that is their life and their passion. Yes. So something like that would be phenomenal.
Absolutely.
On the superhero front, Jason, superheroes are obviously very core to how you outwardly project your podcast and your brand, your identity, that you have those beautiful illustrations for every featured guest. And really, I'm a superhero fanatic myself. Every superhero, of course, has an origin story. So I'm very curious about yours. What inspired you to pursue a career in this exciting, challenging, and really ever-evolving field?
Yeah. So in 1984, when I was still breakdancing on cardboard outside and wearing the baggies and the big Puma laces, my parents got an Apple IIe computer. And I fell in love with computing. All I was really doing, we had a dot matrix printer. Do you remember those, brother?
Oh, heck yeah. I had a Tandy 1000.
Yeah. Weren't those awesome?
Oh, heck yeah.
And so we had one of those and, you just had the print shop stuff or whatever it was you could, and it was, yep. So, and the games and things like that. I really didn't get very involved with programming though, but it was just kind of like my fascination with computing started then. A few years later, my dad picked up a Commodore Amiga, which was just game-changing at the time for graphics. It was like incredible, like the visual. I mean, and looking back at it now, you're like, it's of course a vast difference because, Moore's Law and such. But I mean, it was incredible then. And I discovered that there was something built in, a little programming module, almost like a terminal thing. And it ran a programming language called ABASIC. And I think it even came with a manual that showed you some basic programming functions. So what I did was I started just kind of trying them out. And it was the whole cause and effect thing. One of the cool things about the Amigas is that you could actually make her talk, which was amazing. And it had that, robotic computer voice. But I love the whole causality of it, the cause and effect. Like I could type some keystrokes here, some programming language, and, feel like kind of like a nerd, kind of like a scientist, if you will. And then I could see a result occur like on the fly. And that was also fascinating to me. And that was love for me. It really was. And the games that I could play on there. And then fast forward a few years, I fell in love with comic books. And so that's kind of the segue into the User Defenders theme of the superheroes theme that still stuck with me. But I used to draw Wolverine. He's my favorite superhero by far. Sorry, Justin. I know Batman is.
Oh, that's all right. That's all right.
We got a Marvel versus DC kind of gang war here, huh?
But in the if you remember the Amalgam comic series a while ago, it actually had a Wolverine and Batman hybrid.
No way.
Yeah.
I am not aware of this.
Yeah, look at you got to Google that after this.
I need to seek it out. That is cool. Yep. So yeah, it was like every day I used to actually try to get detention so I could draw Wolverine after school, and I got pretty good at it. And then fast forward a few years later, 1995, it could have even been at the edge of 94, but right around there, I discovered, those CDs we used to get in our mailbox practically every day with 90 free hours to America Online. Well, I tried it out and I couldn't believe that, first of all, the whole idea of the web, of the internet, of actually being in a chat room, where chat rooms were all the rage then, and I could actually hold a conversation with somebody on the other side of the world. That was super like cool to me. And then I discovered the personal publisher feature that they had. And that was basically a way to build your own website using their kind of WYSIWYG sort of, it was like WYSIWYG, but you could also do HTML in there. So that's what started it for me. It was taking my early exposure to programming languages with the Amiga, and also my art background with drawing, and then being able to kind of combine the two. I call it the marriage of design and tech. And that was kind of like, for me, like, that was it. Like, I was done. Like, I was so in love with the ability to communicate instantaneously, to create something that anybody in the entire world could access with a few keystrokes on the web, and being able to program my designs. That was it for me. It's like love at first sight, so to speak. So that's my origin story. And I decided a few years, like, I think this was 96, and I started making my own web pages for people and myself. I started one of the first like underground Christian music communities online and back then. And my goal was to try to bring exposure to some of these artists that just weren't, that were so good, but weren't getting any nods by the record labels. So I started a website that was a community, and it actually grew really big to a certain point. And until I had to just stop. I had to, you know, kind of start getting more serious about earning an income and stuff. But, and I wasn't smart enough back then to figure out how to actually monetize that project. Though I wished I could have figured that out, because it was really cool. But those were just kind of some early things that I did. And I realized, you know, I was bagging pager crystals. I was putting pager crystals in dope baggies. That was my job back then, when pagers were all the rage before smartphones. And I just really, I was kind of tired of the dead end day job. I met my wife who became my fiance. And then I just thought, you know, I need to kind of get serious about this. And I spent 2 years trying to get my foot in the door inside of this industry. And it's kind of like, it is all about networking. It still is. And I mean, you know, you certainly have to prove your experience. You have to grind, you have to crank on doing this stuff, but you really also have to reach out and build a network and be friendly to people and kind of add value. So that's what it was for me. I built an awesome portfolio. I got my foot in the door finally after 2 years of knocking and not giving up. I got my foot in the door at a really cool ad agency in Orange County, California. And the web was just blowing up at this time. It was right before the .com, but I was able to get in there and just kind of get going. But the funny thing is that my manager realized shortly after I started that I really didn't have any real world experience. So I ended up, I had a cool portfolio, but I didn't have any real client experience. So my first like project or two was awful. It was terrible. And that was noticed. I was discovered. My imposter syndrome was especially, you know, kicking in. But the cool thing is that, you know, I was about to get laid off, and my boss said, "Hey, listen, we just can't have you here. You're an art director. You're not producing art director caliber work, interactive art director. And, you know, we're going to have to let you go." And I said, "Please let me, I'll do anything to keep this job. I really want to do this." And so he said, "Hey, you know what? You can enroll in some classes and give that a shot." I did that. I was in school Monday through Thursday, every night after work. I was married by this time, and thankfully we didn't have any kids yet. Made it a lot more doable. And I got my certification in graphic design and visual communication. And during this time in school, a really cool project landed in my lap, and I got to lead probably one of the most innovative web projects that we have done at the agency at this time. So it's just, you know, that the takeaway from that is just defenders, grit. Really grit. I have a tattoo on my left arm. It says fall 7, rise 8. And every day I look at that, and it reminds me, like, you know what? It doesn't matter how many times we fall. The most important thing that matters is if we get up that time, one time more than we fall.
That's a beautiful summary. And as you cited, there was a really interesting time coming out, like in the late 90s, early 2000s, you know, graduating from college, when the internet as a career was this, everyone was kind of figuring it out. It was this brand new thing. And if you said, you told your mom or dad you were a web designer, they were like, a what? So, I mean, it was really like, you know, like you, I was graduating school at that time too. I went to art school with a formal visual communications degree. And then I came out, but like tech and design, I could tell that's where things were going. I had a lot of print design classes in the school. And of course, you know, doing the hand letter set typography, that was fascinating. But tech was something to be discovered. And it was a whole different level of problem solving and visual communication that just held so much undiscovered interest. And I remember there was a recent quote from Jeffrey Zelbin where he said, "Sites back then had so much more soul and so much more character and so much more level of intricacy to them, because everyone was figuring things out, and they were pouring all this thought and undiscovered nature into creativity on the web. Sites back then had so much more character to them, really. Obviously, we're much more advanced now, but that whole level of undiscoveredness in design was an absolutely fascinating time to be coming out.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And there has definitely been some soul lost, I think, in how we design websites now. For better or worse, I know that the business side of things has certainly helped a lot of us have jobs in this industry, which has been great and obviously important. But I just feel like the fun, the playfulness, the experimental nature of just kind of how we made websites just early on has sort of been lost somewhat in general. But I know that there's, just like anything, I think there's always resurgences, and I think there's some cool, interesting things happening now. And you mentioned Jeffrey Zeldman, and I love his new kind of idea about, content performance quotient. And
right.
I think we've been designing websites wrong, and I think we've gotten caught up with the whole social media rage, and there's a lot of controversy surrounding that as well, behind, the designers who are actually intentionally manipulating people to keep them on their sites longer and to keep them and to get them addicted so that they just go to their site more often. And I think there's a lot of problems with that ethically. And I'm glad to see a really big conversation kind of getting out there more. It's already been started and it's certainly becoming more public. And so I'm glad to see that. But I think the idea, and I'm glad to see movements like this, like let's stop focusing, unless we're a blog or something, you do want people to kind of spend time reading your content and things, that's fine. Or a social network, which I just mentioned. We should be designing sites that help people accomplish what they need right away and then get them away into whatever else they need to do. I think that's a great experience, right? If we can actually get them off our sites as early as possible, sometimes that's the best experience of all.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking the definition of content strategy at this point versus, a colossal mm-hmm. dump and forcing people to dig deeper versus getting the people the information they need and deserve as quickly as possible.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So Jason, on the topic of your own work, who is the biggest superhero in your work? Who's influenced you and what kind of, why is this person the motivator that they have been for you?
The answer might surprise you and defenders listening, but it's my wife. She's been such a pillar for me throughout my career and throughout my ventures. I've been a dreamer. I've been known to be a dreamer. And I think early on, I learned that to try to align my dreams with reality a little bit too, because especially now, and you understand this, Justin, having a family, you really have to weigh out the risks you take a little more.
Absolutely.
And things like that. So, I mean, it is, you still can take risks, but they have to be a little more calculated. So my wife has just been a pillar for me and kind of like, let's pick up where we left off with the agency, my first agency job. I got laid off just over a year later, because everything fell apart. The .com crisis happened, mm-hmm. and only sites like eBay and Amazon really stuck around during that time. There was a lot of rebuilding that needed to happen and a lot of kind of reality checking about business models and what made sense on the web. Because you remember at that time, it was like the .com. I mean, it was huge. All you had to do was say .com to a VC and they'd give you millions of dollars.
Right, right, right.
Whether or not it was a good idea. You remember pets.com? No? Okay. Well, that's why. It's because that's what happened with them. And they got millions. I remember they had a Super Bowl ad. Those cost several million dollars to have. And the sock puppet thing. But, look what happened. So that was a really good lesson for all of us in business, the business side of the web. So again, it's that kind of balance, like we were having a lot more fun before this all happened, but I think we also were trying to understand how to actually, kind of balance the business side of things out as well. So, and that, I think that's been a really good lesson, but let's pick up from there where we left off is I got laid off. That was my first time being laid off at a job, and that hurt. It was hard. It was especially hard the first time, but I also got laid off like four other times after that. I've been laid off probably five times in this field, in this industry. And it can be somewhat cutthroat again, and just because it is more specifically marketing based. This kind of work is a lot of marketing based stuff. And when times are tough, which we've had a lot of tough times from 2000 till now, especially in the economy, what happens is companies tend to cut their marketing budgets, and that affects our business sadly. And therefore, unless there's some really smart people that are trying to figure out how, kind of planning ahead for things like this and having a surplus and maybe not not putting signs up, brand new signs up whenever there's tough times. Like that happened to me at one of my jobs, which I'm sure we'll get into, you know, spending multi-thousands of dollars upgrading the signage while you're just not caring about your people in your company. I took a job at Starbucks after that. I kind of thought about it. We need benefits for, I had kids. We had kids at this time. We had two. And I figured, you know what? We need, we had one and one on the way. And we need insurance. And so I took a job at Starbucks part-time. And that was a grind, my friend. I actually was working the morning shift. I was a shift lead. So I would open the shop up at, I would have to wake up at 3:45 a.m. Monday through Friday to get to the store by 4:15 to open it, to actually get the pastries out and get the coffee ready to open up at 5. I did that. I worked until noon, 12:45 or so every day. And then I actually got a second job after that. I worked at a print shop because it was just really hard to get a job on the web at that time still. And so I got a job at a digital print shop. And that was really cool for like just kind of seeing the other side of things, like having more of a well-rounded discipline, even though that skill set doesn't serve me specifically in my work today. I still have that idea, that knowledge of what it takes to actually get a tangible product made using a digital print medium, which has been really valuable. So at a certain point, I was doing the Starbucks thing, being extremely caffeinated. We actually started making our own drinks. That's how caffeinated I had to be. We called it a Jedi. And some of my former coworkers there would remember we created this. It's an iced beverage with 5 shots of espresso. And it was like an iced upside down caramel macchiato with 5 shots of espresso and extra caramel in the cup. And that's how we started our morning. And we had a lot of fun, believe me. But you know, we used to dance for the customers. We used to just heckle with them. It was a lot of fun. But I was tired, man. I was tired. I was just overly caffeinated. And then I went to the print shop job after that from 1 to 5. There were days, man, when I was falling asleep at the keyboard. And then after that, I would have to go and actually go and do my own freelance work at night and then still try to get enough sleep to wake up the next day. I'm telling you, after a year of that, it nearly killed me. I'm serious. I thought I was going to have a heart attack toward the end of a year of doing this. And again, you know, I attribute my wife for just being there. And she wanted to be a stay-at-home mom with our kids. That was kind of a commitment she wanted to make. And I was all in on it because I just feel like that's the best thing for our kids, is she's willing to do it. It's not for everybody. I know it's a calling, but she decided that's what she wanted to do. And I did anything and everything I could to make that happen. And we got through that year barely. And I'm not kidding. There were times when we didn't have enough money for our rent. And at the very last day, I'm not kidding you, we would open the door and there'd be a check for the amount that we needed for our rent. It's just, you know, I mean, whether or not you have faith or not, like you just got to go, wow, there's something happening here. There's something to this, you know, and that happened more than once. And so I think when you have that desire, you have that grit, you have that drive, you have that growth mindset, things are going to happen for you. I think the universe, so to speak, will conspire to help you.
Absolutely. I think baked into that as well is a huge degree of humility. Like I know people who have tried to cut it on their own and freelance full time, or, you know, are laid off. And there's like, you know, people get stuck in kind of a pseudo self-pity mode. And, you know, why does that, like, I shouldn't have to freelance. I shouldn't have to do all this. So the fact that you're able to put all that aside, put any sense of ego aside of why me, and just do everything it takes. I mean, that's a non-trivial thing. And I absolutely respect that. When I freelance for like a year and a half or 2 years, before that was kind of the hardest time in my career. It's complete feast or famine. The way your income rolls in, and the famine parts were the hardest. And like you said, some days you have to skip a meal. I was looking into getting like a forklift driver certification at that point, just so I can do something during the night to keep revenue coming in. A huge amount of respect for you there, and I want to kind of arc off that humility into something else. And there's a huge degree of humility that is intrinsic to the value of the fail fast mindset. And that someone is able to kind of nimbly take that failure as a lesson that's directly actionable on the next attempt. There's, you know, clearly no time for pity or blame, and that delicious frothy latte of dynamism. So can you tell us, you know, riffing on that, can you tell us a story about what the biggest failure in your career has been?
I sure can. And this is one that still is kind of one of the big ones for me, and maybe always will be, because, and the good news is I learned from it. So I work from home on Wednesdays, and I have for the past nearly 5 years. And actually before that, I worked from home on Wednesdays when I worked at MySpace in from 2007, 2009. So it's been really helpful, because both jobs, the one I have now, I work at NCM, National Center Media. And then they were both extremely grueling drives, especially the MySpace one, because, you know, LA, Southern California freeways. But I will tell you that one day on a Wednesday, I was working from home and I was working on my bed. And that was the first mistake, defenders. Don't do work on your bed. You know, there's a psychological principle of association, and your bed should be where you sleep and where you, you know, do those things with your loved one.
Sleep. Of course, we're talking about sleep.
Sleep with your loved one. And right. That was a big lesson for me. I shouldn't have been working on my bed. I think there was a reason for it. It was freezing in my garage where I typically work. And I just decided, well, the next best place away from the kids as far as possible would be my bed. And I just was really tired. I think I had started my morning routine. I wasn't balancing out my sleep as well. So I was a little tired, and I actually fell asleep right around lunchtime on my with my laptop open. And then I awoke to a phone call from a project manager. And that was bad. When you wake up, your mind needs time to kind of come to, especially from like a little power nap. You need a little time to kind of get normal.
Sure.
And so I basically, with the phone call, what the phone call was regarding was a project that I was designing, that I was working on. And it was basically my project manager telling me, the client doesn't like what you did. You need to try something else. And I had put so much into this project, Justin. I had put so much like thought and effort and every detail. And so basically I flared up and I reacted, and I shot the messenger. You know what I mean? I shot the messenger, and that was bad. That was a big failure for me, because all she was doing was conveying a message to me. I was tired. I was not in the right state of mind. I was on my bed, and I didn't put a pause between the stimulus and the response, as somebody once said. And so that was a huge learning for me. In reading Dr. Daniel Goleman's book, Emotional Intelligence, I learned a lot about kind of exactly what happened to my brain. And to get a little scientific here, there was an emotional explosion, also known as a neural hijacking. That means that my limbic brain, also known as the amygdala, it recruited the rest of my brain to its urgent agenda, overriding my neocortex brain, which is the thinking brain, before it had a chance to glimpse fully at what was happening and to decide if it was a good idea. It was not a good idea. So I spent the rest of the day reeling at how I just kind of let her have it on the phone. And then I spent the next, and what I did was, I felt so bad. I roasted a bag of coffee for her, because she did like coffee. And I brought a bag of coffee to her the next day. And I apologized profusely to her in person. I was forgiven. However, I was written up for that, and rightly so. And that's on my record now. And so that was my biggest failure in my career, Justin. That was unacceptable. There's no excuse. Even the bed excuse and being tired excuse, like, there's no excuse to treat another human like that, especially someone who was simply delivering a message. And the other lesson is, don't fall too in love with your work. My God, you know, like, this work is not for us. You know, I read an article on LinkedIn a while ago, and in the title of the article, it actually really offended me at first. It's the title of the article was, "Design is not for you." And I just, wait, who are you to say design's not for me? And then I kept reading the article, and he's like, design is not for you. It's for other people. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's it. It's not about me. It's not for me. It's for others. So that was that was my biggest failure, Justin.
Well, I think it's really telling that a user interaction, or let's say an unsuccessful user interaction in that capacity, was something that you cite as your biggest failure. It wasn't that, you know, you didn't optimize your Photoshop file, or that you used a drop-down menu and you should have used checkboxes or something like that. The fact that you're citing a human-centered interaction in that capacity, I think that's largely telling, not about you as a person, of course, just how you view success of your work. And you were just talking about objectivity versus subjectivity. I mean, that's a huge thing there. Removing yourself from the equation. Design is for other people. And even in like a feedback session, if we're putting work on the wall, or if I'm talking with my team and someone says, you know, I like that, or someone says, you know, that kind of sucks. I mean, there is zero value in something like that. It's just a subjective feedback that is completely unactionable. So those kind of phrases to me are the equivalent of going to Burger King and ordering a Big Mac. So those are like nice swear words. Like it has to be, this is successful because of X, or this is not achieving the project goals because of Y. So
or going to Blue Bottle and ordering a Grande.
Oh, good God. Can you imagine?
I digress.
Yeah, no, I hear you. You get me.
Oh,
you
feel me. Oh, yeah. Keep going.
So, you know, in the terms of like, you know, again, riffing on human-centered interactions or something that's, you know, kind of crazy that's happened or something that's been mildly awkward. Obviously, in our work, user testing is a paramount part of the process, in that, you know, users are interacting with what we're putting together. And we're divorcing ourselves from any subjectivity in this, and users are informing a better ultimate product. So in that vein, do you have any stories or tales of anything that's been like a really crazy or super awkward interaction on the user testing front?
You know, it's funny, when I was thinking about how to answer this question, and I've had a little time because I knew that I wanted to do this, but I couldn't really think of anything specific. Like, if you listen to Golden Krishna's episode, I think he was episode 11. His awkward story is probably one of the funniest that I've heard before. So I'm not going to spoil it. You'll have to listen to it. I still crack up when I think about it. But I don't have anything like that to share. But I do want to, I want to reflect on a time when I actually took some classes before we moved to Colorado Springs. We lived in Orange County, California. I took a UX course at Cal State Fullerton. They offer it's actually a really great course, and they keep getting better. So any defenders out there in SoCal, check it out. And Hillary Bainstock, she's one of the instructors. She's awesome. She's a real world practitioner who's sharing her knowledge back. But anyway, I did that course out there. And one of the things, I think it was her that asked us to do this, there was a McDonald's really close by the campus, and she just asked us to go there and observe people. And I thought that was really weird at first. I was like, why do I want to watch people at McDonald's? But I actually, I learned a lot from that, ironically. And what I learned was, for one, we're so busy, especially now, and it gets more and more, I think it gets, you know, it becomes more and more severe the more technology we get, you know, for better or worse. I'm on the fence about some of it, but I feel like we get so busy that we don't slow down to actually just observe people, to use our superpower of observation. And I just sat there and I just watched people, and I was like, wow, I've never done this before. And you know, you got to try not to be creepy too, because that's kind of that's the flip side of the coin. You can actually be a little weird if you're just kind of staring at somebody. But I think it's just slowing down and watching how people behave, watching how people order a Big Mac, like you said, Justin. I mean, it's really interesting. And I've actually been on the other side. McDonald's was my first job, ironically, when I was 16. It was my very first job. So I've been on the other side and where I've actually taken people's orders. And it's just funny the way people order things, and and you get your regulars, you get to know them, and you start to cultivate relationships with them. And so there's that whole human side of things. But I don't know, it just was really interesting to me to just slow down and actually set time aside intentionally on my calendar to just do nothing but observe, to do nothing but actually get out of myself, out of my own head, and actually be more other-centered, and to see what other people do, how other people live their lives. And isn't that rooted in empathy, Justin?
Absolutely. And so very well said there. I feel like I've said this to some coworkers before, and I think actually the last time Zeldman was in Chicago, I told this to him as well. I feel like if you're not a student of human observation, if you're not genuinely fascinated by how humans interact with one another, with their, you know, just how they're experiencing their environment, and again, not in a creepo sense, but if you're not genuinely passionate about human interaction, you're in the wrong field. Yes. We have to absorb those things almost as fuel, as a science. And I think there's, you know, absolutely some quantitative and qualitative things we can take away from just a simple observation, and that coupled with what you're talking about. I write in my book about the act of a linger, pausing to let these events kind of unfold and not rushing from point A to point B. There's so much magic and so many synapses that are firing in those moments that are lost if we're just, you know, blinded to the world around us. So, I mean, that you're really dialing in. You're hitting home with me on that one.
Coming soon from Envision, the design collaboration platform used to create the digital products you love. Envision Studio, the world's most powerful screen design tool. Unlock new dimensions of screen design with Envision Studio's new adaptive layout engine, rapid prototyping, advanced animation, shared design systems, and other game-changing features created to help your team design better, faster, together. Clark from Envision says, this is the design tool we've always wanted, and we're so excited to share it with you. Visit userdefenders.com/studio to get early access.
Yeah, and I love that. And I love, you know, in your book, Justin, Cultivating a Creative Culture, Defenders, awesome book. And Justin and I talked about it on userdefenders.com/CCC. I love your day one, how it starts on a Friday, and you let the person that's applying, you let them decide what you want to do, like a field trip. And it could be a creative thing to a museum, or, and that's another part of just being intentional about slowing down and taking in your surroundings and just being that, practicing that empathy towards others. I think what a great first impression.
Oh, thanks, man. I appreciate that. And you know, genuinely, there's so much more to be gleaned from something like that rather than looking at a portfolio. You get gained so much insight into what fuels someone. And again, in a human observation sense, like we're just talking about, there's so many, you know, magical moments to unfold there. So I appreciate that.
Absolutely.
So on the point of, you know, we're talking about a lot of comic dialogue here and about superheroes. And I'm curious, in your own life, what is your design superpower?
I guess it's just, I want to design stuff that works for people. I guess that's my design superpower. Like, I really want whatever I design, I want that to actually be the right thing. I want that to actually solve the problem that makes life better for my users. Like, I guess that's my design superpower. And I get so frustrated when I see bad design in the world, especially from enterprising companies. I get frustrated about it, and I'm pretty vocal about it too, because I just feel like there's no excuse. I mean, and there probably are business things at work, but I feel like, you know, in the age of design leadership, where design is as a seat at the table, like there's just no excuse anymore to have, especially an enterprising level company that has a lot of money, like Apple or Spotify, to actually not correct the bad experiences that they're putting into the world.
Yeah, I have to ponder about the procedural breakdown in that. Like, to me, at some point in that process chain, subjectivity is entering the equation. If it's at the C level, if it's somebody who's, you know, a high level stakeholder, where does the science and the metric based design break down in that process? Where you, like you said, it's a company that probably has reams of cash flow to do the best design, or the best visual communication, or the most usable product possible. Where does that break down?
Right. That's what's so baffling to me, and that's why I don't know. It blows my mind, and that's why, you know, I feel like that's kind of the User Defender's mission. You know, it's like, you know, I fight for the users. That's what Tron said. And I just feel like that's such a great example. You know, we really, as any designer, anything we put into the world, we need to really do our best. And I know there's certain limits to what that can be. There's certain boundaries as designers. You know, if we're not the CEO of the company or whatever, you know, then, you know, you can be a champion, but you can also be shut down. I understand that. So I, you know, kudos designers in these organizations that are making these issues known. You're doing your part, you know, whatever else is up to the stakeholders or business leaders. Yeah. I don't know where I was going with that, but I feel like that's just an important thing. You know, we really should be fighting for our users in everything we do as much as is within our power to do so. I try to do that.
Absolutely. And the point of power is obviously there's an antithesis of that. And everyone listening, and of course, you and I know that Batman has no weakness whatsoever, but Superman does. And that weakness is kryptonite. So, Jason, I'm curious, what is your design kryptonite?
I love the little bit of bias I hear in the Batman. I love it. Now, that was, you know what? It's true. I think Batman, in Batman versus Superman, the movie, he basically won. He really did. He won.
He laid the smackdown. Yeah,
for sure. Spoiler alert. But so what's my design kryptonite? Justin, this should be no surprise to you. It's bad leadership. bad leadership.
I'm dying for you to flesh this out.
All right. So I worked somewhere and we talked about this in your inspiring episode, Justin.
We sure did.
Yeah. Again, userdefenders.com/CCC. I worked somewhere and I moved my whole family for this job over 1,000 miles away. We left our comfort zone. We left our family for this job because I was all in, man. And the unfortunate thing that happened, which was completely out of our control, out of anybody's control, is the person that hired me, the leader that hired me, left the organization just barely a few months after I started. And the next 6 months or so was spent trying to find a replacement. So I guess it was really hard to find somebody. And I think what happened, and this was the first, I think, lesson, is that they settled on somebody. And and in my honest opinion, and I think probably many others who worked with this person, they would agree that the organization settled in hiring this person in, because the person that came in had an ego that couldn't even fit through a door. And this person thought that he was the biggest hotshot in the world, cared more about himself than his people, cared more about his ego, cared more about his what people said about him than about his people. And I'll just tell you one story. And this is a story I didn't tell on your episode, Justin. This is another thing that happened. This was toward the end of my very short tenure there, after having, again, moved the family, bought a house out here for this job. And so what happened was I knew I was going to be going out, heading out to vacation. And there was a really big decision being made on our most important web property, the actual website of the organization. And it was basically going to be redesigned. And that was one of the reasons they brought me in, for crying out loud. That's one of the reasons they created my position, was to be a part of this redesign. And on a very important meeting, like a kind of a discovery kind of brainstorms meeting with like the most important people in the whole organization, quote unquote, ended up taking place when I was going to be absent, unfortunately. So what I did was myself and one of my designers, we totally innovated around some ideas that we wanted to make sure would be entertained, at least even brought forth, because we've been a part of it. We've used the product. We had a really good understanding of the pain points and some areas of possibilities. So we spent like a decent amount of time, I would say even a week, possibly nearly a week, innovating and actually documenting some ideas that we believe strongly would make this product way better for our users. And again, there were assumptions, but I think they were very, very rooted in actually being users of the product as well. What I did was I think it might've been the day before or so that we were leaving, I shared these with this person, with this quote unquote leader. And then I didn't hear anything. And I went on my vacation, came back. I think it was a 2-weeker. So I came back 2 weeks later and then I think a week goes by. I didn't hear anything from this person about what I shared. And so it was just kind of eating me up inside. And so I was like, I finally kind of made a meeting, put a meeting on the calendar. And I ended up, you know, kind of saying, hey, remember that thing I sent before I left about, you know, kind of our ideas and things, and hoping that maybe you would be a champion of, you know, maybe share some of these innovations if you thought they were worthy of kind of being a part of this new project. And I'm not kidding you, I got so shut down by this person. I was punished for innovating. That should never, ever happen in a creative culture. Ever. Should never. If you're a leader, you never want to punish your people for innovating and trying to make things better. I got shut down. He's like, yeah, I deleted it right away. He deleted that email that had the PowerPoint with all of our ideas. He's like, he gave me the third degree on it. And I'll tell you, that was the beginning of the end. I think that maybe even after that, for some reason, I don't know, I think it was an ego trip, my friend. Because I think it was like anybody's ideas that were better than his were not going to be entertained. I think that was it. You know, and like I said, Justin, in our interview, a good leader is the first to take the fall and the last to take the credit.
Absolutely.
And this guy was anything but a good leader. And so, you know, and the other thing that I said in there was your ego is not your amigo.
I love that.
Those are some things that I just, unfortunately, this person didn't know, didn't learn or didn't care to have the humility to try to learn. You know, that's my design kryptonite is bad leadership, Justin. I know that concept is near and dear to your heart as well. And you wrote the book on cultivating a creative culture.
Yeah, ego, Jason, is absolutely, I mean, this is a known quantity for us. Ego is absolutely cancerous to a creative culture, to doing good work, to the success, really, of a product. It's all about one person at that point. And, you know, in terms of running themes, we talked about subjectivity versus objectivity. That is 100% subjectivity and belittling those you should be raising up. So that is anti-leadership. And, you know, my jaw dropped the first time you told me the first part of that story in our own dialogue, and now it's dropped further hearing the other side of the coin there. So hopefully that fellow is that you're referring to has moved into a different career path.
That person is no longer at the organization.
Okay. Okay.
Ultimately, people like that have to end up like kind of starting their own thing, because God help them if they lead another team at an established organization.
Yeah, it's all for the best at that point, of course. Mm-hmm. So in terms of fighting the good fight, Jason, you are a UX superhero, which you clearly are. What is your UX superhero name?
Catalyst.
That means that when you mix this, that needs a reverb on it or an echo.
Oh, yes. I like that idea. So yeah, I think the catalyst, or just catalyst. And the reason for this is I love the idea of a catalyst, and I'm not an engine person. I'm not very crafts-like. I'm working on it, but I think there's the catalytic converter, and that's a very important part of it. I think my roaster has a catalytic converter that actually suppresses smoke, which is nice when I'm reaching second crack. But basically a catalyst, I think, is a spark. It's a spark that distributes into something greater, something bigger. And causes something really, the thing that's supposed to happen, it causes it to happen. And so I like that idea. And I was thinking about like, why catalyst? And I started thinking about my interview with Laura Klein. She was in episode 43, and her episode, I think, is called Making New Designers. And I love what she said. The last thing she said to me on the interview was, she's like, keep making new designers. It's good. And I thought about that. I was like, you know what? That's really cool, because that's what this show is all about. It's about making new designers. And the other part of this is that, well, you know, the inspiration is certainly a really large part of that, because we have to stay inspired to do, I think, our best work. And so that's really a cornerstone mission of this podcast, is to inspire and equip. But I thought about this too, taking it a step further. And this is something I talked about with Joe Johnston at the end. I actually got a little dusty in the room when I was explaining this. I got a little emotional. What I realized is that, and I'm so thankful, Defenders listening, you guys and gals, you've been so supportive to me, and, you know, sending me emails and tweets and about how much the show means to you and how it's helped you in your career. Like, there's a guy named Marius that I think he's overseas. I'm positive he's not, he doesn't live in the United States, but he is moving in. He's a leather craftsman. He's moving into UX. The podcast inspired him to have the confidence to go for a job, to change careers, you know, later on in life. And he got a job. He landed a job in UX, and he, you know what he did, man, this is so cool. He actually handcrafted me a leather belt that's probably going to be in my mailbox in a few days, just as a way of saying thank you to me. So I think about people like Marius, and I know he's going to do just his attitude, his passion, his excitement for what's to come, and for the difference he can make through design. Like, that's contagious to me, man. And I get to hear from people like Marius. And also the other thing is that the next Doug Dietz, this is what I told Joe Johnson, the next Doug Dietz is listening. The next Margaret Hamilton is listening to the show. That excites me to know that whatever is being said on these interviews and whatever is being put out into the world, like, that could be the catalyst. That could be the spark that inspires that next Doug Dietz, you know, or Margaret Hamilton to take action and design something that changes the world. And that is not an under, that is not exaggerating. I believe that is happening, and I believe that's going to happen, continue to happen. And I want to take a second to just kind of say, to describe who Doug Dietz and Margaret Hamilton are. They're both completely different in different time zones and different fields. But Doug Dietz was the inventor of this adventure series MRI for children. And the reason that he created it, I get emotional thinking about this. And there's a video, again, we'll be sure to link to it. There's a video of him describing why he did this. Basically, he was observing. He was a big part of creating these large MRIs that are instrumental in medical science, in helping to identify cancer and really important life-threatening diseases. But what he observed when he watched children go through this thing, they were terrified, understandably so. And so it broke his heart. you know, and the kids have to get medications, which isn't great either, to, in order, you know, put them out in order to get an MRI. Like, come on, there's got to be a better way. And so what he did was he used design thinking and he innovated around this device for children, a target audience of his. And he created a fun adventure series where he made it into like a pirate ship and he made the background colorful and he made it a fun experience where kids were getting through this thing and going, can I come back tomorrow and do this? Like, can you imagine? I've done an MRI. I've hit the panic button. It's terrifying in there.
Sure.
So like that to me, like, dude, that is design at its finest. And it's not a screen. It's not screen-based. You know, I think that's the other thing is like, as designers, as UX designers, and web designers, we think, well, we're only going to be able to innovate around screens. No, not at all. There's, you know, and even though screens are important, your experience that you're gaining through designing for screens could actually transport you into another area that's not screen-based that will actually save lives too. So I just think that was a super inspiring thing. The next Doug Dietz is listening. Margaret Hamilton. The name may not ring a bell at first, but she was a programmer and I think one of the unsung heroes of the Apollo Saturn space missions, which my father happened to be a part of. And I interviewed him for userdefenders.com/rocketman, which was a really fun one to do. But she was a programmer on those missions who led a team credited with, they developed the in-flight software, which included algorithms designed by various senior scientists for the Apollo command module, also including the lunar lander and the Skylab project. So what the important part of her mission was, you remember, I mean, computers were so slow back then and they were big as cars, right? I mean, typically. So you could only fit so much of a computer in a lunar module, right? That's going to the moon. And so she used her programming superpowers to design subroutines that would only run the most important procedures at the given time. And at the crucial moment, because of her intelligence and her team of doing this, knowing that the processing power was so limited, the subroutines and the code that she wrote helped that lunar module land on the moon because it, you know, there's only so many processes it can crunch at one time. So she made sure that the most important ones were actually sent first. And that's actually what helped make the Apollo moon landing possible. Not talked about as much, but listen, the next Margaret Hamilton, you're listening right now. I know it. And you're going to do something incredible. You may even be a part of Elon Musk's project and going to Mars. Who knows? It's exciting to me.
The catalyst.
I love how you brought that back in and its bassy beautifulness. I mean, you're talking about an awesome responsibility, Jason, an awesome opportunity, really. I mean, the opportunity to put all the spotlight and all the brilliant designers and UX and design thinking superheroes you have here, it's really a fuel for an industry. And, you know, I kind of led with this in my intro, and it wasn't pandering in any capacity. The value you're bringing and the value this podcast brings to our industry, to inspiration, to human-centered design is really immeasurable. So again, thank you for that.
Thank you so much, Justin.
So a lot of this, everything we're talking about revolves around fighting for the users. And you cited Tron before, and you know, I have a small side project, UX shirts. One of my t-shirt designs is I fight for the users.
Yes.
And clearly we're aligned on the awesomeness of you know, how far ahead of its time it was for Tron to be saying that. And of course we understand, you know, the duality between, you know, the simulated world and the tangible world in the movie sense. But for you personally, how do you fight for your users?
You know, I think it's just, I like to watch them. I want to observe them using the design. I think that to me, there's no better way to know whether it's working or not than to actually watch them struggle with it. And it's humbling, and it's in a good way. Because again, we tend to fall in love with our design, maybe even more than the problem that we're trying to solve. And so I think that when I have a chance, and I try to always make sure that I have a chance to do this, to actually watch people, you know, use the design, it's really great. I read a tweet out there once, and it was so cool about user testing. It's like watching someone use your design is kind of like watching a horror movie where, you know, they, instead of like just running away from the house, like they just run into the barn or something. It's like, and you just want to tell them like, go the other way, go, you know, like it's totally like that, you know? Oh, and another little tweetable thing I saw a long time ago was, you know, not testing your design with users is like getting into a taxi cab and just saying, just drive. You know, just drive. I don't know. It doesn't matter where I'm going, you know, but anyway, I think that's a big part of it. I just try to observe them using it and struggling with it and try to learn from it. And I think another way that I fight for the users, as we kind of touched on before, is just kind of being vocal about bad design being served to users, especially by enterprise level companies who have the capital to fix it.
Right.
You know, I mentioned Apple, you know, why does FaceTime not have a dial keypad yet? I can't push one for English because there's no keypad on there. I think they're working on it. I hope they're fixing it, but why can't I use my magic mouse while it's charging, Justin?
Oh boy. Yep. I think of that, how Seinfeld used to have that bit. And it's like, who is the UX wizard who thought of this one?
Yeah. And then Spotify. I mean, I'm probably, you know, like I probably talk as much about Spotify as Jared Spool does about United Airlines. Sure. I just feel like I don't get it. Like, there's some really creative people. I just saw an article yesterday that their in-house agency won the agency of the year from Ad Age. Like, they have some really smart, creative people there, but they keep focusing on aesthetics and not on usability. It drives me insane. It should be function over form. It's quite the opposite, and it bothers me to no end, I'm telling you. I'm a paid subscriber, so I can complain. It's like, you know, voting and then, you know, complaining. You can complain if you vote. So I feel like those are just the things that bother me. And I think I fight for the users by trying to expose some of this, you know, I mentioned in my interview with Alexa Roman, I think she was episode 45. We talk about criticize by creating, and I like the idea of that. And it's kind of stoic in nature, which I also appreciate, but I just don't think we can fight for the users and be stoic about this stuff. I think we have to kind of expose some of it and we have to draw attention to it. And, you know, of course, as a designer, I want to be respectful of some of the reasons why certain things don't change. But come on, it's been 5 years for Spotify.
Right.
It's been nearly five years. They haven't done crap to make their app better at all or even driver friendly. I just noticed at Audible just the other day, my update recently, they have a driver's interface, a driver UI. I was like, brilliant. Most of your audience, what are they doing? They're listening in their vehicles. If I die in a car accident, it's probably because I was trying to use Spotify's app while I was driving, which I probably shouldn't be doing. But I mean, just make it easier, guys and gals. Come on. There we go. My soapbox. I'm going to step off now.
I was going to drop the S word, Spotify. I know you're very passionate about that one. So you kind of did it organically for me. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And check out my article. I wrote about it. I wrote about both Apple and Spotify. We'll link to them. But the Apple, the Spotify article is called Spotify is incapable of empathy and doesn't care about their users.
No fluff in that title,
friend. No, just right to the point.
Hi, I'm Jeffrey Zeldman. I design websites and I fight for the users. You're listening to User Defenders Podcast with Jason Ogle.
So, you know, on your journey of fighting for the users, and you just walked us through, you're clearly you're passionate about articulating your process there. What one habit in that process do you believe, you know, most contributes to your success on that journey?
My morning routine. So I started a morning routine. It was about two plus years ago. And it actually was because I listened to Pat Flynn's Smart Passive Income podcast. And it was episode 150, Defenders, where he talked about how he started a morning routine. And my manager, my awesome manager, Jeff, actually told me about Pat's podcast when I was just starting to get into podcasts because of my drive. And the first one I happened to listen to was 150. So that shows you like when I first started listening or when that date was. But basically he runs through how he had a conversation with Hal Elrod, who wrote the Miracle Morning book. He talked to him, I think maybe 10 episodes before that or so. And he was inspired to start it. And it was a Friday on the way home after my manager has told me, I listened to the episode and I knew I needed something in my life. There's a Bible scripture that says bodily exercise profits little. That was basically my life verse for a long time. And I didn't do anything for myself. I didn't do anything for my health. And I was wondering why I was so grumpy, like a lot. I was often, you know, as we mentioned in my failure story, I was kind of quick to be reactive and quick to be emotional and instead of just kind of like letting things process. Basically, I just said, I need something. I need this in my life right now. And I said, Monday, it's happening for me. Monday, I'm starting my morning routine. And so sure enough, I did. I woke up. I think it was, I can't remember if it was 4:30 or 5. It might've been 5 the first time. But I normally wake up at like 7 or 7:30 if I'm lucky. And I woke up early. And I'm not kidding you. It felt like Christmas morning. I mean, as we mentioned, I've got a large family and I have a lot of small children. It is really hard to find time for myself.
Sure.
And I realized that the most ideal, the best way to do this is to make time for myself before they wake up. And they typically wake up around 7-ish. And we have a rule. They can't come down until 7:30. Mm-hmm. And so basically that's 2.5 hours that I get to develop for my personal growth. And that was it for me, man. Like, and I'll tell you, this podcast is a result of my morning routine. Because when you are taking care of yourself and you are just feeling awesome, just something magic happens where you want everyone else to feel great. You want everyone else to feel awesome and you want to help people. It's incredible what happens. Basically, I was driving to work one day, listening to music that day after I listened to some podcasts. And then the song Fight For You came on by Morgan Page. And I realized that I've been putting I Fight For The Users on my LinkedIn and my, other social media presences. I've been doing that for years before. And it just finally those neural synapses fired and those pathways connected where it's like, this is what I need to do. I need to create something that can help designers. It's my time to give back. And so anyway, I attribute all that to my morning routine. I'm not kidding. That's been huge for me. The morning routine. And and by the way, John Maxwell, I'm a quotes guy. I love quotes. John C. Maxwell, a wonderful leadership author, says you'll never change your life until you change something you do daily. The secret of your success is found in your daily routine. So that's been absolutely huge for me. And the other thing that's been huge for me is a growth mindset. And I talk about this as much as possible because I feel like, effort trumps talent any day. Because if we believe we can grow and we believe we can learn anything we really truly desire to, there is absolutely nothing that can stop us. And I think about John McEnroe. He was a really grumpy tennis player who had a fixed mindset. Anytime he made a mistake, he threw his racket on the ground, broke it. He yelled at the ref or the judge, whatever mm-hmm, it was. Mm-hmm. And he blamed everything else but just his inability to actually want to try harder, to want to put effort in. And sadly, the Columbine kids, they had fixed. She mentions both of these cases in her book, Dr. Carol Dweck of Growth Mindset book. The Columbine kids sadly had fixed mindsets too. And they were being sadly picked on by, a lot of the other kids there. And they didn't believe they could ever change. They didn't believe they could ever grow and come out of that. And that was a really terrible ending to that story. But one of the things Dr. Carol Dweck says in her book, there's another great quote I want to share, and this kind of ties into the show as well. She says, "We like to think of our champions and idols as superheroes who were born different from us. We don't like to think of them as relatively ordinary people who made themselves extraordinary." I love that idea. And that's the whole idea of the show. Why I like the superhero concept is because when you really dig into superheroes, like Bruce Wayne is a perfect example, Justin. He's just a dude. Of course he's a rich guy. That helps a lot too, to get the cool stuff, but he's just an ordinary guy. He's got struggles. He's got challenges. What a horrible backstory this guy had. He could have let what happened to him with his parents being murdered in front of him. He could have let that define him. He could have let that define him in a way that's totally negative, to where he just is the victim and he doesn't do anything to make things better. But he chose to do the opposite and actually make a difference and fight, for good and to make a difference for his community. And so I guess that's why I just love this idea, is that we can all be superheroes, all of us, if we have a growth mindset.
Absolutely, Jason. Tremendous way to phrase that. I mean, you are incredibly well read. You always have, like you said, you love to quote things. You always have a quote at your fingertips. And I want to riff on that for a second.
Sure.
If you can recommend one book to our listeners, and I'm sure you, this could be a show unto itself. I'm sure you could have a podcast on books you would recommend, but
yeah,
kind of a challenging one. If you could recommend one book to our listeners, what would you pick there, and why is it?
I'm going to cheat a little, and I'm going to recommend three. Okay. So
if you can recommend three books, Jason.
Okay. Well, first of all, I'll say the Bible for spiritual issues. That has been my lifeline. That's been my light unto my feet. So much wisdom in there, especially in the Proverbs. Ironically, there's 31 Proverbs and there's 31 days in a month. So reading a proverb a day has really, really been a great benefit for me. So that's a good one. That one's, that's one that's on the best. It's on the bestseller list. They had to take it off because it's just like always on the bestseller list. But the mindset, as I just mentioned, for personal growth, I absolutely love the ideas in there. It changed my life because I realized that the only person stopping me is myself. And that's for all you defenders listening too. The only person stopping you from growing into whatever you desire to do is yourself. So have that growth mindset. And also, lastly, ego is the enemy for designers. And that's one I'm telling you, that's written by Ryan Holiday. It may seem like an ironic choice for designers, but I will tell you, especially defenders starting out, my heart is especially for younger designers, newer designers starting out, trying to navigate this ever-evolving field as we talk about. The first tendency when you make a mistake is to blame. And I'm telling you this from experience, because that was, you know, when you're starting out, you want to, you know, you have the imposter syndrome is pretty strong. Mm-hmm. The tendency to blame and the tendency to kind of pass the buck is very strong. And it has to do with ego. It's rooted in ego and the things you design, it's easier to fall in love with those things. And so I just want to say, like, any designer starting out, I recommend that book. It puts things into perspective of, like, you know, our ego is it's holding us back, and it's not realistic. It's not a realistic portrait, especially for growth. So Ryan Holiday does a really good job of explaining all of that in that book. So, and I want to also, this is kind of a little shameless plug here. Audible is a partner of the show, and I have a link, defenders listening. If you're not an Audible subscriber yet, you can get the other two books. I don't think the Bible's on there, but you can get Mindset and Ego is the Enemy for free. If you go awesome. To userdefenders.com/freebook and I get $15 for that. So that's kind of a win-win. It helps the show and it helps you. So I would love it if you take advantage of that. But yeah, that would be my answer to that, Justin.
Riffing on that, Jason, you know, there's a lot of clear takeaways from that, from those people, those authors, their lives and their careers. For you personally, what is your advice for aspiring UX superheroes? You kind of cited before the huge opportunity here for listeners right now to become the next, you know, the next UX superhero in any way you could think, in product design, UX design, visual design, what have you. What is your advice? This is a very broad question, I realize, for aspiring UX superheroes.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is one of my favorite questions, actually. And I mention that a lot when I ask my guests this question. And it's to be thankful. I mean, that's one of them, is be thankful, respond to people that reach out to you. Like, I can't tell you how often, like, there's been a number of times where I'll reach out to somebody who's maybe even like a web celebrity type of person to be a guest on the show, or just to tell them, like, hey, you know, just I admire your work. And then to never, like, hear back, never get a reply, or, you know, even a thank you, like, that's not cool. I think there's some pride and some ego in there. And I think that's not the way to kind of continue to grow. And is it like, are you too busy to be thankful? Are you too busy to even give a simple reply? I don't think so. And so I would say, like, first and foremost, be thankful, practice gratitude, an attitude of gratitude. It will take you a long way. And I say that today, you know, higher attitude is probably the best soft skill you can have in trying to get work in this field. I would say just try to keep a good attitude when you're trying to get work, because you can always grow. When you have a growth mindset, you can always learn skills. But if you're a jerk, nobody wants to be in the same building with you, let alone even receive emails from you if you're remote. So I'd say that is a big one there. Humility as well.
Yes.
Stay curious. Design is about people. If we're not curious about people, we're limiting the boundaries of our design superpowers. Become like children. That may sound weird, but I have a 4-year-old daughter who asks so many questions, mm-hmm. and it can be somewhat frustrating at times, but I'll tell you, when I look at the big picture, I'm inspired by my daughter. Her name's Emery, and she's always asking me questions, and she'll even say, Daddy, I have a good question. She won't just say, Daddy, I have a question. She'll say, Daddy, I have a good question. One of those was, she asked me, Daddy, why do we drink our spit? And so I said, well, honey, that's a really great question. And I said, it's because it has nowhere else to go. And then the other day she was like probably about 5 inches away from my eyes. And she's like, Daddy, are those seeds in your eyes? Like, just like random.
Endless curiosity.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So I'm inspired. And if you have kids, or even if you don't, just try to become, you know, like children in that way. I think it's so inspiring. And ask a lot of questions. You know, don't be afraid to say you don't know the answer. And again, that's kind of one of those areas when we're newer designers, it's easier to kind of fall into, like, I don't want to be exposed. I don't want to be found out. No, just take that high road of humility and be willing to be vulnerable and transparent. Say, you know what? I really don't know, but I'd love to find out. Use that growth mindset and say, I'd love to find out the answer to that. So ask a lot of questions. Dan Brown, I can't remember what episode he was on, but great interview. His superpower was the question. And I love that. That was really great to me to hear that, because we can learn so much, especially in this work, if we just ask questions. A couple more. Fight for the users, as we talked about, and design every experience like it's your last, because you know what? It just might be.
Right. I think, you know, being endlessly and restlessly curious, you know, if we're in a workshop or we're, you know, kicking off a project and there's, you know, levels of implied or hierarchical or org chart based seniority in the room. And if someone C-level or you know, SVP, what have you, is saying something that you feel is presumptuous or has subjectivity interlaced into it or is off base in any capacity, it's our responsibility as people in this industry, let's say, to be endlessly and restlessly curious and to ask, just ask why. Well, Jason, I and certainly your users, once this is in hand or in phone or in earbud, have found this dialogue to be absolutely fascinating and informative journey, really on the man behind the podcast that's really become, and I say this with no pandering whatsoever, it's really become a jewel of our industry. User Defenders is a staple, my own podcast list, and has served as oral coffee for my earbuds on many a morning commute. This opportunity to talk to you today and to put your own story and knowledge and advice and background before the users, I couldn't be more thankful for this. And I found this personally very rewarding. And again, thank you for the opportunity.
Well, Justin, thank you, first of all, for that. Those super generous words. I can't tell you how much that means to me. And I said it before, I'll say it again. I couldn't think of anyone better to do this with me. And I'm so thankful you took the time. And thanks for all of the value you added to my answers. So I feel like, you know, we're kind of brothers from another mother, you know? And so
it just
was super fun and super enlightening, and I'm just so grateful. Thanks again, brother.
Thank you, my friend. So in keeping tradition, let me close with this. Fight on, my friend.
Thanks, bro. You too. Feels weird recapping my own episode, but here goes. When I first started this show, I wrestled with the idea of superheroes. I thought, that's dumb and corny and perhaps even a little egotistical. Then I found this definition that completely changed my perspective faster than a speeding bullet. The definition I found was this: superheroes typically possess a strong moral code, including a willingness to risk one's own safety in the service of good without expectation of reward. Those are the types of super guests I want on this show, and thankfully, I believe, have been on the other side of the mic for 50 episodes and counting. I couldn't help reflecting back on the very first time I hit record on episode 1, which feels like a long time ago. The anxiety and nerves I felt convinced me that my heart was going to burst out of my chest. But this introverted by nature, imposter syndrome sufferer got out of my comfort zone in a big way and went for it anyway. After I hit stop on the recorder, the feeling of creating something out of nothing, of having a conversation with a UX superhero and capturing it for your benefit, was better than any drug I've ever tried. To think this former drug addict, alcoholic, high school dropout, lead growler in a death metal band called Excretion could, first of all, marry a beautiful, amazing lady who stuck by my side through thick and thin and has had a lot of children with me. To think that I could be hungry enough to learn enough on my own to land a career in this amazing field, start a personal growth journey that was a catalyst to this show, and talk to and extract value out of some of the most intelligent, inspiring, welcoming, and generous human beings I've ever met, and create something that resonates with and makes a difference for you, is nothing short of humbling. Thank you for being on this journey with me, Defenders. Thank you for inspiring me to fight on. Thank you for fighting on. This world desperately needs more design superheroes. There's far too much bad design in this world, and thankfully for us, a lot more work to do. This world needs the next Doug Dietz, the next Margaret Hamilton. The world needs you. Thank you, dear Defenders, for faithfully lending me your ears, your time, and your heart for 50 episodes and counting. And last, but certainly not least, I just want to say, as always, fight on, my friends. We'll be right back.